This is Wendy Bauer, returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 9th, 2015. We'll continue now with the obituaries. Jean Bantner, Assumption. Jean Bantner, 94, of Assumption, died November 7th, 2015, in Heritage Manor, Pena, Illinois. Funeral Mass will be at 11 a.m., Tuesday, November 10th, 2015, in St. Mary's Catholic Church of Assumption. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until service time, also in the church. Burial will be in St. Mary's Cemetery, Assumption. Memorials may be made to St. Mary's Catholic Church or St. Mary's Altar Society. Joyce E. Burton, Decatur. Joyce E. Burton, 82, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, November 7, 2015, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services to celebrate Joyce's life will be 10:30 a.m., Monday, November 9, 2015, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service. Burial will be at a later date in Macon County Memorial Park. Alan James A.J. Fair, Decatur. Alan James A.J. Fair, 73, of Decatur, Illinois, died peacefully at 8:09 on Saturday, November 7th, 2015, at his home. A memorial will be held at a later date to be announced. Clarabel Mann, Decatur. Clarabel Clara Mann, 79, of Decatur, passed away Thursday morning, November 5th, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital, with her family by her side. Services to celebrate the life of Clarabel Mann will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th, 2015, at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 10, 2015, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to Homeward Bound Pet Shelter in Decatur. Kenneth H. Park, Decatur. Kenneth H. Park, 98, passed away peacefully on November 6, 2015. Services to celebrate Ken's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 11, 2015 at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be at 10 o'clock a.m. also at the funeral home. Entombment will follow in the Star of Hope Mausoleum at Graceland Cemetery. Donald J. Hines, Decatur. Donald J. Hines, 89, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, November 6, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services to celebrate Don's life will be at 2 p.m. Tuesday, November 10, 2015, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 to 2 o'clock p.m. Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials are suggested to Central Christian Church of Decatur. Luther Wayne Martin, Mount Zion. Luther Wayne Red Martin, 91, of Champaign, Illinois, formerly of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away at 7:35 a.m. Friday, November 6, 2015, in Memorial Medical Center, Springfield, Illinois. A service to celebrate Red's life will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 11, 2015, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Burial will be in the Mount Zion Township Cemetery with military honors provided by the Macon County Honor Guard. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 10 a.m. until service time. Memorials may be made to Presence Home Health. Betty Farley Ploger, Monticello. Betty Farley Ploger, 85, of Monticello, passed away at 9:37 p.m. October 24, 2015, at her residence. A memorial service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Saturday, November 14th, 2015, at the Chapel of St. John, 1011 South Wright Street, Champaign. A small reception will follow the service. Donald Eugene Reynolds, Decatur. Donald Eugene Reynolds, 82, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 5:19 a.m. Saturday, November 7th, 2015, at Imboden Creek Living Center. Funeral services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, November 9th, with visitation 1 hour prior to services at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Burial will be at Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville, Illinois. Memorials may be made to New Beginnings Church of God. Roy L. Stacy, Niantic. Roy L. Stacy, Sleepy, 68, of rural Niantic, passed away on Thursday, November 5th, 2015, in his home. Visitation will be from 10 o'clock a.m. to noon on Monday, November 9th, 2015, at Fullenweider Park Funeral Home in Iliopolis. Graveside services will follow at Harristown Cemetery in Harristown, Illinois. Fullenweider Park Funeral Home at 432 7th Street, Iliopolis, Illinois, is in charge of arrangements. Cindy Wicker, Delavan. Cindy Wicker passed away on November 4th, 2015. Visitation will be held Tuesday, November 10th, 2015, at Camp Wilson Foursquare Gospel Church in Harristown, Illinois, from 10 to 11:30 a.m. The funeral service begins at 11:30 a.m. Burial will be in Harristown Cemetery, Harristown, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Cindy Jo Wicker Fund, care of CEFQ, Pekin, Illinois. Robert I. Corman, Monticello. Robert I. Corman, 81, of Monticello, Illinois, formerly of Hammond, Illinois, passed away at 10:14 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th, 2015, at the Decatur Memorial Hospital, Decatur, Illinois. Private family graveside services will be held at the Hammond Cemetery, Hammond, Illinois. Public visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday, November 7th in Atwood. Memorials are suggested to the Hammond United Methodist Church. And now we will go to local entertainment by Donette Becker, staff writer. Lincoln Theater Broadway Show, customized for Decatur. Broadway will be invading downtown Decatur, and many in the community are happy about it. Broadway to Downtown Decatur, featuring the Unexpected Boys, was held on Saturday, November 7th at the Lincoln Square Theater. Also from Donette Becker, local entertainment, Kablooey Improv Group opens new spot. From Decatur, improvisational comedy gained what may be its most widespread popularity with television shows and live experiences like Whose Line Is It Anyway? Now there's an opportunity for the Decatur community to try it out. Jason Albright and the Kablooey Group present Improv Games and Stuff from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Friday, November 13th in Loft 125, the Madden Arts Center's new entertainment venue. Tickets are $10. The show's format was created to include the audience into the performance. It is not designed to be performing improv or sketch comedy, Albright said. It is designed to be real easygoing and low pressure. Four performers will guide the crowd through games similar to audience participation skits seen on improv stages. It's going to be the audience dictating how it goes, Albright said. Members of the Kablooey Group have been performing together in various venues for over 15 years. They have experience in musicals as well as comedies. But the Kablooey Group is fresh, Albright said. The group began the project to try new improv games, but knew they and the audience needed to be as comfortable as possible. We don't want anyone to feel the pressure, Albright said. The audience is invited to bring ideas and props to the evening event. The Kablooey group will be providing other items as well. Improv Games and Stuff is the debut of Loft 125. The Decatur Area Arts Council transformed the third floor of the Madden Arts Center into a lounge-style environment, creating the new venue. We were hearing people were wanting something where they can sit back, said Sue Powell, Decatur Arts Council Gallery Director. A casual kind of atmosphere. Future events will have a laid-back, relaxed atmosphere, including games and music. The Arts Council is piloting four different shows for the 2015-2016 season, beginning with Improv Games and Stuff. Participants are allowed to bring their own beverages while they snack on complimentary popcorn. Improv-inspired food will be available for purchase during this event. This is designed to make an evening affordable for everyone, Powell said. Albright and the Kablooey group will keep the atmosphere easygoing. The games are designed to be fun and spontaneous, but we don't expect people to be raring to go right off the bat, he said. The spotlight is not on you, and we are working for a common goal. And a listing of some local entertainment venues for this week, November 9th, REO Speedwagon performing at the Virginia Theater, Monday, November 9th at 7:30 p.m. On November 10th, at the Cerro Gordo Civic Center is Jam Session at 7 o'clock p.m. or at the Westminster Presbyterian Church, Vocal Jazz Night at 7:30 p.m. On November 11th, several things are offered. At Elmer's, the DJ Prestige Entertainment at 7 o'clock. At the Prairie Land Dance Club, Fantastic Flow Class and Open Dance at 7 p.m. At the Wild Dog Saloon, karaoke with DJ Big Daddy Frank at 8 o'clock. Curly's Bar offers Dr. DJ and karaoke at 9 o'clock. And the Lincoln Lounge offers Stevie Ray at 9 o'clock p.m. on November 11th. From the education page, Lee News Service writer Stephanie Esters brings an article from Carbondale, SIU Research Holds Hope for Coal Use. As one faction of Southern Illinois looks for ways to find new energy, a representative of the long-standing coal industry is hoping that energy source is not regulated out of existence. 6 months ago, staff at Southern Illinois University's Advanced Coal and Energy Research Center received a $4.6 million grant to support projects developing new energy sources and education at SIU. Staff are calling the project the Energy Boost Program as they work to develop ways to invest the money in researchers and innovations. We're charging paths for the future of energy, said Amy McMorrow Hunter, the center's marketing and outreach coordinator. We have to make energy work in this area and the university. One thing Center Director Thomas Wiltowski wants to do is find ways to recapture the waste from coal and use that as an energy source. For instance, he said about 30% of the gasoline put in a car actually powers it. The other 70% is emitted as burned waste, such as exhaust from the vehicle's tailpipe or in heat from the heating system. That, Wiltowski said, is energy that has value but is lost. We can make coal utilization more efficient and cleaner, he said. You can do with coal several things. You can tweak it. Right now, the center is supporting the work of other educators at SIU as it looks for researchers with ideas about energy development and tries to recruit future energy students. One of those projects includes looking at the carbon dioxide utilization, ways to recapture that lost energy. The center is also reaching out through its Regional Energy Forum starting this September. Topics have included energy research and energy careers. The next forum will cover innovations and startup businesses. That event is set for 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on November 20th at Morris Library on SIU's campus. The forums are open to the public. We're trying to get in people's faces and say this is something that affects them daily and can improve their lives, Hunter said. The Energy Boost program is also awarding up to $50,000 seed grants to faculty for relevant research they want to pursue and awarding scholarships to college students. While SIU's Research Center makes plans to invest its $4.6 million in new energy work, a representative from the Illinois Coal Association looked for hope for the future of coal. Philip Gonet, president of the association, said the state's future coal production is threatened, primarily by two pieces of federal legislation, the proposed Clean Power Plan and the Stream Protection Rule. The Clean Power Plan calls for a 32% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions from the 2005 levels by 2030. Public hearings are still being held on this proposal. Comments must be received by January 21. States have to submit their Clean Power Plan to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency by September 2016, but extensions can be granted to September 2018. Power plants are considered the largest source of carbon dioxide emissions, which contributes to the climate change, according to the EPA. The Stream Protection Rule proposes to better protect surface and groundwater from the effects of coal mining. Obviously, the last few years, with an increase in production in Illinois coal, things are looking a little bit better in Illinois than in the rest of the coal-producing regions of the country, Gonet said. However, if the proposed rules that are out there prevail, I don't see how the industry can survive, he said. That would be bad. I don't want to sound pessimistic. I think we're hopeful that the legal challenges will stop the rules. If those things went away, and if we could use coal in this country, things are looking good for the Illinois Basin, mainly because if you have the pollution control equipment to burn the bituminous coal, it can be used anywhere in the country, he said. Wiltowski said he has an answer for Gonet's pessimism. Solving those problems will require more extensive research, and this is why we are here at Southern Illinois University, Wiltowski said. This will require more research, and this is why we are here. And from Shelbyville, by Sharon Barraclough, MOVE will aid Shelby County job services. Clients of CEFS Economic Opportunity Corp. in Shelby County will have better access to job opportunities when the Community Action Agency moves its offices into the current offices of the Shelby County Job Center in Shelbyville. The CEFS outreach office location within the Job Center will help both partners share operational costs and allow partners to meet new Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act collaboration requirements, said Barbara Waymeyer, CEFS Outreach Director. CEFS is a community action agency that serves low-income clients in Clay, Effingham, Fayette, Shelby, Moultrie, Christian, and Montgomery counties. The agency provides help with job training, housing and utility service information, transportation, and food insecurity issues. CEFS County Coordinator Beth Beck Marta said clients who struggle with lack of training and employment will benefit by having the Job Center and CEFS services at one site. We believe that by collaborating, we can provide comprehensive services to the people of Shelby County and provide access to the services they need. One service that will be changing is the CEFS food pantry. The agency will discontinue its food pantry with the move and refer people to the First United Methodist Church food pantry. Most of the people who use CEFS food pantry come to us already, said David Mills, church food pantry coordinator. We ask people to come once a month and we'll just continue to try and meet their needs. CEFS will make their official move to the new location on North Illinois 128 on Wednesday. We are relocating over Veterans Day to minimize customer service impact, Waymeyer said. The new Shelby County CEF office will be located with the Shelby County Job Center at 515 North Cedar. The phone number is 217-774-4541. And more information is available at www.cefse.org. And an editor's pick from the Tribune News Service, Social Media, an Evolving HR Challenge. Odelia Santiago's photos of co-workers on her Facebook page prompted some snarky comments. No big deal, right? A suburban Chicago hotel and convention center where she worked as a banquet server thought otherwise. Last year, the Tinley Park Hotel and Convention Center sacked her for violating employee handbook rules, including one against disloyalty. Now, Santiago could get her job back. In June, an administrative law judge with the National Labor Relations Board ruled that the convention center violated federal labor law by imposing overly broad employee handbook rules on Santiago and her co-workers. Those rules, the judge said, could chill workers from talking about their working conditions, which are protected under federal labor law. The convention center, which can appeal the rule, declined to comment through its attorney. The case illustrates a growing trend of the NLRB forcing employees to revise employee handbooks for the digital age as people talk about their workplaces on sites like Facebook and Twitter. Workers' rights are the same as the water cooler, same at the water cooler as they are on the web, said Jessica Kahanek, an NLRB spokesman. Brian O'Keefe, a Washington, D.C.-based attorney who represents employers in labor disputes, said about a quarter of his caseload involves social media or disputes over activity protected under labor law. This is a hot area, O'Keefe said. The volume of cases, he added, is frustrating for employers, which are having trouble keeping pace with employee handbook changes mandated by the NLRB. Even employers that change rules worry about getting dragged into costly legal battles, said Nancy Hammer, Senior Government Affairs Policy Counsel at the Society for Human Resource Management. What's more, she said, the law will evolve along with new types of social media. This isn't going away, Hammer said. Richard Griffin, NLRB General Counsel, released a 30-page memo in March reminding employers that well-intentioned rules could be illegal. Under federal labor law, Griffin said employees have a right to discuss such things as wages, hours, and conditions of employment, and to strike and unionize. He also wrote that employees are free to criticize or protest their employer's labor policies or treatment of employees, to argue and debate about unions and management, to communicate with news media, government agencies, and third parties, and to photograph and make recordings. And breaking news on Monday morning, November 9th, Illini fires athletic director from Champaign. Illinois has fired athletic director Mike Thomas as it prepares to release the final report from its investigation into mistreatment of football and women's basketball players. Interim Chancellor Barbara Wilson said Monday that the report found no wrongdoing by Thomas, but she says a change in leadership was needed in order to move forward. Thomas's firing follows allegations by former football, women's basketball, and women's soccer players that they were mistreated by coaches. Football coach Tim Beckman was fired over the allegations, and lawsuits filed by players in the other two sports are ongoing. Thomas came to Illinois from Cincinnati in 2011. He replaced Ron Genther. A news conference was scheduled for later Monday. And finally, an editor's pick on the health page, Employers See Benefits of On-Site Health Clinics. This is actually from the Tribune News Service writer. James Sheeran, Director of Corporate Benefits for MillerCoors, has lost count of the number of people who have toured the company's worksite health clinic in Milwaukee over the last year. Interest in on-site clinics, he said, is exploding. Employers large and small increasingly see the clinics as an integral part of initiatives to encourage employees and family members to live healthier lives and help control healthcare costs. The clinics, staffed by physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and often physical therapists, provide primary care and other services to employees and their families. That's benefited companies such as QuadMed, a subsidiary of printing company Quad Graphics, that staff and run the clinics. QuadMed, one of the pioneers in the business and an outgrowth of a clinic opened by the company in 1991, operates 90 clinics in 18 states. An estimated 29% of employers with 5,000 or more employees had worksite clinics last year. Last year, MillerCoors Clinic, next to its fitness center, had about 2,600 patient visits for primary care, 1,900 visits for physical therapy, and 2,200 ancillary visits, such as getting a blood pressure test. The clinic employs 10 people, including a full-time physician, a full-time physical therapist, and a part-time physician assistant. We think it's been quite effective in slowing the rise in healthcare costs, Sheeran said. We are very confident of that. The company, which employs about 1,500 people in Milwaukee, uses three measures to gauge the return of the clinic's cost. Hard dollars, the cost of providing care at the clinic compared with the cost at similar settings in the community. Savings from avoided costs, such as emergency department visits or an employee's lost part of the day for a doctor's appointment. And long-term savings from managing chronic diseases, such as diabetes or high blood pressure. The clinic also is convenient for employees and can result in better care. Appointments, for instance, are scheduled for a minimum of 20 minutes, and employees and their families can build a relationship with a physician. That's important to us, Sheeran said. The typical clinic has two or three clinicians plus support staff through its larger clinics, and its larger clinics can have five or six physicians. Roughly half of the clinics have a physical therapist. The potential savings vary by employer and depend on the workforce and services. Clinics shared by several employers, so-called near-site clinics, are also becoming more common. Waukesha County, the City of Waukesha, and the School District of Waukesha opened a clinic last year for employees and their families and retirees. And the West Bend School District, also in the Milwaukee area, has a clinic now in its third year. And this has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review. I will look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a good day.